Welcome to another episode of the Social Impact Journal. I'm really glad you could join me today, and this is not an episode to miss. Today, I'm talking to Nav Sawhney, the founder of the Washing Machine Project, which is a UK-based social enterprise that is doing just incredible things. They have built a manual, off-the-grid washer-dryer machine that has been distributed into over 8 countries in refugee settlements and underserved countries. Before we get into the trailer and start the episode, please, if you enjoy the podcast, do share with friends or colleagues, and it's a big help to us if you can like, subscribe, or share the podcast. Here's the trailer.
I went on to study engineering at university, and I graduated, and I joined one of the world's best graduate programs, an appliance manufacturer called Dyson. I was there for 3 years, and I realized that kind of every bit of good engineering that I was doing was making a vacuum cleaner for a rich person. I decided to quit my job, and I took the drastic decision to work for free for a year to make clean and efficient cook stoves in South India. The village I was staying in was a village called Kulapalayam, and it was a very beautiful village that didn't have very much in terms of resource. So, for example, if you didn't have a generator, there were frequent power cuts, and you'd have days on end where you didn't have power sometimes. Water was only switched on 15 minutes a day. The village for a year was my home, and my next door neighbor was a lady called Divya. She wanted to work but just didn't have the time, because she'd spend hours and hours a day on unpaid labor. And whether it was foraging for wood or standing in line for water or hand washing her family's clothes, it was a back-breaking struggle. And I said to Divya, you know, why don't you just buy an electric washing machine? I can buy you one, you know. She's like, I don't have a generator, so how am I going to buy an electric washing machine, and how am I going to use that? And that was the penny drop moment for me, that someone like Divya doesn't have appropriate technology made for her. So I promised her a manual washing machine, and that was back in 2018. I came back home and started what is now called the Washing Machine Project.
Thanks, Nav, for taking the time to join me on the podcast today. How are you?
Very well, thank you very much. How are you, Jack?
Yeah, all good, thank you. All good. Really looking forward to this conversation. I think I've had you on LinkedIn for a while, seeing some of the great work you're doing in a lot of countries. So happy you could join me today and talk through some of your inspiration of starting the Washing Machine Project and what you're up to right now. So maybe we can start with an introduction. So what was your career background, and how did you get to the position of starting the Washing Machine Project?
Yeah, well, thank you for the invitation as well, and really appreciate it. Your energy and enthusiasm for this sector is really inspiring. So thank you for building this platform. Nav means new in Punjabi. I've always been obsessed with new and innovative things. From a very young age, I used to be taken to air shows with my father. He was an aerospace engineer, and I'd be obsessed with how these kind of big aircrafts would go into the sky. I'd come home, I'd take the toolbox out of the shed, and just rip apart all the appliances around me. I would not know how to put them back together again, and that used to really make my mum quite angry. The curiosity was triggered from a young age. I went on to study engineering at university, and I graduated, and I joined one of the world's best graduate programs at an appliance manufacturer called Dyson. I was there for 3 years, and I realized that kind of every bit of good engineering that I was doing was making a vacuum cleaner for a rich person. And I was fed up of that. I wanted my engineering to make a positive and lasting impact on the world. And that's why I decided to quit my job, and I took the drastic decision to work for free for a year to make clean and efficient cook stoves in South India. And there I realized that this is exactly where I want to be in life. I want to make impact. I want to be at the heart of the product innovation for people that don't have very, very much. And the village I was staying in was a village called Kulapalayam. And it was a very beautiful village that didn't have very much in terms of resource. So, for example, if you didn't have a generator, there were frequent power cuts, and you'd have days on end where you didn't have power sometimes. Water was only switched on 15 minutes a day in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening. So the village for a year was my home, and my next door neighbor was a lady called Divya, and she was a very very practical woman in her 30s who had two kids, and we became essentially best friends. Her English was amazing and my Tamil was rubbish, and she wanted to work but just didn't have the time, because she'd spend hours and hours a day on unpaid labor, and whether it was foraging for wood or standing in line for water or hand washing her family's clothes, it was a back-breaking struggle. And what that meant was it denied her opportunities to work or rest, and you know, her kids to study, etc. And so that's when I saw this, and I said to Divya, you know, why don't you just buy an electric washing machine? I can buy you one, you know. She's like, I don't have a generator, so how am I going to buy an electric washing machine, and how am I going to use that? And that was the penny drop moment for me, that someone like Divya doesn't have appropriate technology made for her. So I promised her a manual washing machine, and that was back in 2018. I came back home and started what is now called the Washing Machine Project.
Wow. And, you know, it's not often, I think, as you mentioned, you know, many people are building innovations as engineers for the developed world. So it's not often that someone would actually go out and look at how we can create solutions to, you know, to support communities that are in need. So what was the reaction of your friends and colleagues when you decided, I'm going to quit Dyson, I'm going to really go and do some research and understand and do that free work?
At the time, most people said that I was making the biggest mistake of my life. They thought I was mad to do that. Very difficult conversations with my family as well. But I knew that I needed to do this. But actually at the time I thought I should secure my return back to the UK with another job, and I begged Dyson to keep my job for me to come back to, but they didn't, and I'm so glad they didn't, because otherwise I'll still be there. No disrespect to anyone at Dyson, of course. It's an amazing organization with amazing people.
Yeah, no, so I mean, So you started the Washing Machine Project, and of course you maybe started developing a prototype. So how did that process work? And, you know, who did you have to bring in? What knowledge did you have to start accruing? Because you weren't working in the international development space before.
Yeah, it's a very good point, Jack. I was an engineer with limited to no experience of the sector. I decided to go back to university and study a master's called Humanitarianism, Conflict and Development at the University of Bath, which really changed the trajectory for me in terms of contacts, connections, understanding the system of the NGO world or humanitarian world, policies, and everything in between. My fellow colleagues and students were some of the most interesting characters around the world. Some really, really experienced humanitarians, some that were just about graduating from their undergraduate degree. So a real mixed batch of people. And it was actually the first few lectures that I had that I started seeding the idea to my colleagues and getting feedback, and my lecturers would get involved, and it was really interesting. But what happened was they were looking out for me, and one of my student friends was quite senior in CARE International in Iraq, and I told him about this idea I have of making a manual washing machine, and he said, you know, why don't you just come out to Iraq and try it out? And I said, yeah, why not? And I had no knowledge of Iraq as a country or the system or how it works or the applying for funding or distribution, monitoring, evaluation, nothing. So that plan was set. That was kind of like on the Monday, and I had my friend with me called Alex, who worked with me at DICE, and I said, Alex, do you want to go to Iraq? I want to put this prototype together and test it out with refugees. And he said, yeah, sure, I'll help you. And we put this machine together, a prototype together, in a couple of days, and we went to Iraq on a thing, it was a Friday or a Saturday, with this machine in tow. It was called the Divya machine, named after the inspiration behind the organization. And I remember a funny moment where we packed our clothes in this prototype to take on the plane, and it looked quite dodgy. But what it did allow us to do is test the prototype with, I believe, 79 families in 5 days, if I remember correctly. That was back in 2019. That report is still on our website, thewashingmachineproject.org, where we the first kind of interest was shown in a formal capacity, where we tested this machine. People really were interested in the alternative to hand washing clothes. We really understood the need more and more, and we understood how we should bring this to a country like Iraq. And that was the first starting points of the prototype and the first distribution and testing.
Thanks, Nav. So I speak to a lot of different founders, and especially those that are sole founders. You know, it's so challenging in those early phases. So listening to you talk about the master's degree that you studied and the contacts that you had, but even bouncing ideas off the lecturers, just how important was that in the early phases as you were starting to understand, you know, as you say, monitoring and evaluation or partnership development? How important was that set of contacts?
Massively. I mean, if I didn't get my first break or that first introduction to Iraq, then I wouldn't have gone to Iraq, and we wouldn't have used that report. And it later developed into an introduction to Oxfam and the directors of Oxfam that agreed to implement another project with us. So these opportunities come few and far between, and you should just jump at them. A note on my lecturer, his name's Oliver Walton at University of Bath, and he's very, very supportive. He's always been supportive, and he's now kind of a trustee of the TWP Foundation. So he sits on the board of the TWP Foundation, which is a charity that's associated to the Washing Machine Project social enterprise. So yeah, so important.
Amazing. And I think, you know, what a great place to start with CARE International, getting that credibility from such a big organization. So you come back from Iraq with your friend Alex, with after doing that testing and really having an understanding. So where do you go from there in really building out a full prototype?
Lots and lots of feedback from the Yazidi refugees that we met, 79 families, and we wrote that into a report. We got kind of a feedback of what size it needs to be, how it needs to work. We just needed funding. It was at that point where we got introduced to Oxfam. Oxfam then said to us, hey, we have this innovation fund through the Response Innovation Lab, and we fund projects like yours. Can we have 50 of these machines to test out in Jeddah 1 camp in Mosul? And we said yes. But this was at the point where we didn't even have a prototype. We just had an idea. And many people said, don't take it. You know, we're too early on this stage. And I said, this is a golden opportunity. We must take it. Oxfam is wanting to support us. Let's do it. It was very difficult, very hard. We got like a team of volunteers around. At that point, no one was getting paid as well. So it's all volunteer efforts. But what it did allow us to do was go back to the basics of trial and error and test and prototype, and then implement more machines into the field to get rapid feedback, which is so important when doing something new. You need to that continuous development, that continuous feedback with the beneficiary or end user.
But for sure enough, and the Oxfam partnership then came, and I completely agree. You know, you never know if that innovation fund will be there the next year. So, you know, if it's there and that they're looking to support, it's, you know, you have to take it at that stage. So once the product is built and is out for partners to be using, do you have any specific stories that you can share of beneficiaries that have used the Divya machine and how it's really helped to improve their lives?
Yeah, I mean, so we're now in 2023. We have a number of partners like the UNHCR, Save the Children, for example, as well. So, and we're present in 8 countries now, and we've distributed a number of machines, positive impact to 30,000 lives. We're in our 5th iteration of Divya washing machine, so it's continuous and it's always evolving. And the continuous feedback loop is so important, and I'll just stress the importance of continuing to innovate for the people that really really need them. An example of a story that comes to mind for me personally, although there are many, many stories on our social media as well as our website, thewashingmachineproject.org, is a lady that I met in a camp called Yasmin Camp on the border of Lebanon and Syria. Kausek is her name. She has 10 children. She's 36 years old at the time, and she has been in this refugee camp for 9 years. And she's lost everything. There's no clear path of whether she's going home or whether she's staying or what rights does she have, etc. And she has to wash her clothes for her and her 10 children 3 hours a day. And I'm really proud that we get to meet someone like Kausek, who has so much unpaid labor in her life. And we get to shorten that time by 75%. So we distributed that machine to her on the weekend. And I went back a couple of days later and I said, Kausek, how's the machine? And she didn't say nothing, but she pointed at her husband, who was wearing this very crisp, clean shirt, white shirt. And she said, it cleans very well and saves a lot of time. So I was like, that's really good indication. But there's countless examples of people that have saved more time and they can rest and save more time and don't feel pain anymore as well.
Thanks for sharing that, Nav. And as you plan to distribute more machines in different countries, what is that strategy around partnership with? Is it just NGOs, or are you working with other organizations to be able to distribute these out to camps and different communities?
Yeah. So we really toe the line between charity and social enterprise quite neatly and in the middle. So we do a lot of large corporate partnerships. So FTSE 100 or Fortune 500 companies in the US and the UK who are very large in employee count and have big budgets for corporate giving, they give us money to create impact. We then use that money to develop and deploy machines. So often enough, we have funded machines that we get to develop, and then we deploy these machines going forwards. On the other flip side of things, we have NGOs that come and approach and say, hey, we need 100 machines, or we need 30 machines. We want to distribute these machines in the X, Y, and Z country. But the model that we want to shift to is a more sustainable approach of making it as affordable as possible, $50 and below, where anyone in the world can buy our machine and we distribute it to them through NGO partners. So that's our long-term strategy. And then as anyone listening to this podcast would know, NGOs can be quite siloed. So the country director in Oxfam in Kenya is likely not to be speaking to the country director in Brazil in Oxfam, so let alone Uganda, which is a neighboring country, which actually is really bad from an NGO standpoint because that really hinders global innovation. And we are well aware that there is no one size fits all innovation for one country over another. But we would love to introduce this innovation from a global standpoint. So getting ourselves onto catalogs and really also lobbying and making NGOs understand that this is a huge issue for your beneficiaries, which I don't think people understand even to this point, to this day. I don't think the big NGOs really understand how big of an issue hand washing clothes is for their beneficiaries, how much time, how much water, how much effort it takes for their refugees, for their beneficiaries.
For sure, and I completely agree about the different NGOs being siloed. I mean, we've experienced that, and sometimes you have to just build those connections at the local level. Which is frustrating at times because it's the same organization and they have exactly the shared mission.
But it doesn't help scale, right? How do you scale?
Exactly, yeah.
How do you scale if country director in Uganda doesn't talk to country director in Kenya and you're doing the same solution for them both? It's like you have to have two relationships. And then the other issue is that country directors and key stakeholders move on every 2 years. So it's like...
It's tricky, isn't it? So, you have to be definitely in the loop on a regular basis.
It's like a social butterfly almost. but yeah, there must be a way to buck these issues, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a win-win for everyone. But often we see it's just not the case. Even neighboring countries, Uganda or Kenya, as you mentioned, you know, it's a case we're seeing with many different international NGOs, rural inclusion. I know you also work with universities as well in the UK. So how does that work and what type of collaboration do you have going on there?
Yeah, we have a number of universities that support us. So University of Bristol and Bath are our flagship universities, but we also work with University of Edinburgh as well. So great universities in the UK that research with us through their students, whether it's undergraduates or postgraduates. We pick a research topic, whether it's in engineering or non-engineering, social sciences, for example, and some of the key challenges that we're facing. For example, if it's a mechanism on the machine, can you take this mechanism and make it 5 times cheaper and 10 times more lighter, et cetera, et cetera? Or we give a social scientist a problem statement. How does innovation through water, sanitation, hygiene, and gender work in Uganda? And then just research. And then they have reports, and then we use that reports in our day-to-day work. But they also provide, the universities also provide us funding to take on permanent positions. And they also provide us exposure as well. So we've had a number of media articles in collaboration with universities as well.
Amazing. And you mentioned around collaborating with research, because one question I really wanted to ask you was, you're currently in 8 countries. As you move into a new country with the innovation, you mentioned earlier that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. So there's a need to do that research to understand the local community perspective. So are you working with the British universities on that, also to do feasibility studies for new countries?
So we conduct our strategy for monitoring the evaluation or baseline testing is with local partners. So we preferably like to partner up with local NGOs, grassroots organizations that have the trust of the people, that understand the context and have access to really hard to reach areas that we wouldn't normally have. So we partner up with them, and together we come up with a needs-based assessment, and together, context specific, we try and understand who are the most appropriate people that we should be asking on a needs-based basis. So that could be women-led families, large families, disability households, people that are open to innovation, and people that don't have a electric washing machine. So those are examples of prioritizing people. So that needs-based assessment would probably go out to 500 to 1,000 people, would then assess that, and then we would try and understand from who these from these people who needs a machine, based on a point scoring metric. It's a very slow approach, but it gives us the rigor and scientific data to understand where should be prioritized with the partner and the beneficiary, and so that's how we love to do the work that we do.
So are you undergoing any of that right now? Is there any new countries that you can share with me of what's next for the washing machine project?
So what can I can share that we have a very big partner announcement coming later in the year that will probably like tenfold our impact. So right now in the last 3 years we've positively impacted 30,000 lives, so 10 times the amount of machines, 10 times the impact, which is great, and I'm looking forward to telling you more about that later when I'm allowed to say it. But also what that means is more countries, more machines, and more people to deliver this impact. So, you know, if there's anyone listening that wants to get in touch and wants to meet, thinks that they need a solution like ours, which is a manual washing machine that saves time, water, and effort for people who hand wash clothes, then that's really important. And we are a user-led organization, so we want the need to be pulled out of us rather than us to push our solution onto a country.
Amazing. Yeah, and for sure. And right now, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see Nav's social media handles are running down the bottom of your screen, and if you're on Spotify or Apple Music, then you can see his handles in the show notes if you want to get in touch with Nav. So Nav, I know it's been a long journey, 5 years or so now, and you've had to overcome lots of obstacles to get to the position of where you are today in 8 countries delivering, you know, huge amounts of impact. But if we had to go back to 2018 or 2019, when you first traveled to Iraq, you know, having the experience, knowledge that you had today, is there maybe one thing that you would change?
We didn't have money to pay people. So volunteers are so helpful, but also very, very kind of sparse, and sometimes could be unreliable. So if I had the ability to pay people quicker or sooner, I would, and get that experience and rigor needed. But I wouldn't change, you know, taking Oxfam on board when we only had an idea, and being advised against it, because that led to so many other things. So, yeah, I think this telling people more about the idea, getting more experienced people in earlier on would have kind of helped us get to this point quicker. But yeah, no regrets.
Great. And we set up this podcast really as a social impact journal to really share the best bits and pieces of advice from either founders, academics, or innovators, and to have them share their advice to young change makers, you know, joining the sector. So if you were to have one page of that journal and to use all the experience over the last 5 years to share a piece of advice from someone that maybe is leaving university and is deciding to go between into maybe engineering for a company like Dyson, or engineering into the humanitarian space, would you be able to share some advice with them?
Yeah, this has always stuck out to me for a long, long time, which is that you need to fall in love with this solution. Well, the problem is that people fall in love with the solution. When I joined Dyson, I fell in love with the products, right? The product was amazing, but I didn't really care about the problem. So my advice is fall in love with the problem and not the solution, because the solution will always change and the problem will always remain. And being passionate about that problem is the best thing to do. It's the thing that will keep you up at night, keep you thinking, keep you motivated to wake up in the morning. That problem is always going to remain, but the solution will always change.
Thanks for the advice, Nav, and really thanks for taking the time today to chat with me on the podcast and share your experience and the work of the Washing Machine Project. So how can people get in touch with you? Your social media has been running down the screen for most of the episode. But are you looking to talk to any different individuals or contacts, and how can they support the work?
Yeah, just add me on LinkedIn. Navjot Soni is my name on LinkedIn. I'm sure you can reach out to me in other means, whether it's on the washingmachineproject.org's website. We're really looking forward to talking to people that want to accelerate this impact through this innovative solution to beneficiaries around the world. We're on a really good path. And it's a really exciting product. It's something that you probably haven't seen before. And I'm looking forward to helping support your beneficiaries around the world.
Thanks, Nav.
Thank you.